So we're continuing with batch number 4 of local news and features. I'm now joined by Kath, and it's Tim with you as well. We have some headlines for you. Now, apologies if you don't like the headlines too much, because we're kind of dividing listeners a little bit, because we have some people who really want them so they don't have to listen to the whole edition, and then we have some people who find them annoying. So a big apologies if you find them annoying, but we have to keep them on really for the people who want to know what's in each batch. So our headlines are, we've got, from me coming up, we've got £5 million Potteries Museum revamp approved with new cafe terrace seating and eye-catching entrance. And then I've also got for you 462 Staffordshire ambulance workers attacked and abused in 12 months. And Kath's stories coming up are,
probation service failings after robber found dead in Stoke-on-Trent hostel, and mum boycotts Lloyds as bank account shut down in Russia row.
Okay, apologies if you didn't hear Kath for the first few seconds of that story. And there was a bit of a problem with the microphone there. Okay, so my first story for you now is, £5 million Potteries Museum revamp has been approved with a new cafe, terrace seating and eye-catching entrance. A revamp of one of Stoke-on-Trent's main visitor attractions is now getting underway. Plans have been approved to carry out a major refurbishment of Hanley's Potteries Museum, an art gallery. The biggest external change will involve covering over the moat at the front and the side of the museum with new terraced areas. A full height glazed main entrance will be created at the corner of the building with new steps leading up from Broad Street and a wheelchair access ramp from Bethesda Street. And the museum's cafe will be moved to the foyer where the shop is currently located, with space for extra seating on the new terrace, creating a vibrant atmosphere for visitors. The museum's existing entrance, which is accessed via a walkway over the moat, which has long been a magnet for drug dealers and rough sleepers. In previous years, the council had erected temporary fencing to block off the part of the moat beneath the walkway, and the council say the moat is increasingly detrimental to the museum and very off-putting for visitors, and that the new terraces, while more costly, will be a better solution than simply gating off the area. Internal changes will include the creation of an artist-in-residence room and the conversion of the three-story sculpture court into an open storage gallery. The latter will increase storage capacity while also allowing the public to view items that are not always on display. Stoke-on-Trent City Council has now approved the plans for the museum, which was first built in 1956, with various adaptations made in the late 1970s and early 1980s. The revamp, funded by Arts Council England, is expected to be carried out in two phases, with the internal works being done first and the museum will remain open to the public. It's expected to be completed next year. The planning officer's report reads, officer view is that the application proposal would result in significant benefits to the city centre by enhancing and strengthening the culture offer provided by PMAG. The application will enable upgraded museum facilities and create a better connection with the city centre through a relocated entrance and associated public realms works. The scheme is considered to represent sustainable development and would provide a high-quality design in a prominent city centre location. The plans have been approved following the creation of the Spitfire Gallery and the opening of the relocated City Archive and Reading Room. So over to Kath, who's going to read her first story for us in batch number 4.
Probation service failings after robber found dead in Stoke-on-Trent hostel. Concerns have been raised following the death of a 33-year-old man at a Stoke-on-Trent bail hostel. Carl Sheldon was residing at Wharf Lane House approved premises in Shelton, having been released on licence from HMP Dovegate on March 2nd, 2021. He had been convicted of robbery back in 2017 and sentenced to 7.5 years in prison. An inquest held into his death has heard that Carl had been found slumped on the floor of the Rectory Road Hostel on March the 8th, 2021. North Staffordshire coroner ruled that Carl died of natural causes. A report by the Prisons and Probations Ombudsman revealed that there was no evidence that anyone had any significant face-to-face contact with Carl, who was residing at the hostel during the COVID pandemic. It added that staff relationships with residents had suffered because of measures introduced to reduce face-to-face interaction, which resulted in a lack of proper supervision and support for them. During Carl's time in prison, staff frequently recorded that he was under the influence of drugs or was suspected of using illicit substances, according to the report. At the time he moved to the bail hostel, drug testing of residents had been suspended due to COVID amid fears of an increased risk of transmission of the virus. In her report, Deputy Prisons and Probation Ombudsman Elizabeth Moody states, "I am concerned that appropriate priority was not given on his arrival to informing Mr. Sheldon about his reduced tolerance to drugs and the increased risk of an overdose. I am also concerned that he was not challenged when staff identified that he had likely been smoking cannabis in his room and no one considered searching his room for illicit drugs." On the day of his death, Carl had briefly left the hostel to go to a cash point. When he returned to the premises, a residential worker signed him in and described him as being pleasant and chatty, adding that she had no concerns for his welfare. Carl then spent 10 minutes in the smoking shelter before returning to his room at 12:55 p.m. This was the last time he was seen by anyone. The report summarises, on the afternoon of his arrival, he received an induction from his key worker, which was conducted through a video conferencing platform due to restrictions in place during the COVID-19 pandemic. At around 2 a.m. on March the 7th, a residential worker identified a very strong smell of cannabis coming from Mr. Sheldon's room. No one spoke to Mr. Sheldon about this, and it was listed to be discussed at a pre-arranged meeting with his offender manager and key worker later in the week. On March the 8th, Mr. Sheldon briefly left the premises late in the morning. At 12:55 p.m, he returned to his room, having spent 10 minutes smoking outside. This is the last time he was seen. At a whole premises curfew check at 11 p.m, a residential worker found that he had died. "We found that the likelihood of reduced drug tolerance and increased risk of overdose were not discussed sufficiently with Mr. Sheldon on his first day at Wharf Lane House, as national instructions specify. We also found that his suspected cannabis use was not appropriately challenged and that no one considered searching his room for illicit drugs." In terms of recommendations, the report adds, the National Approved Premises Team should ensure that all new residents are told about their reduced drug tolerance and increased overdose risk on arrival at the AP, in line with the expectations of the Approved Premises Manual. The National Approved Premises Team should ensure that residents suspected of using illicit drugs in the premises are appropriately challenged and that staff search their room in line with current guidelines. The National Approved Premises Team should ensure that residents receive appropriate supervision and support during the COVID-19 pandemic. Police had launched a manslaughter investigation after the death. Staffordshire Police arrested two men on suspicion of manslaughter and supplying Class A drugs, but both were later released without charge. A probation service spokesperson said, "Since Mr. Sheldon's death, we have implemented a series of measures to ensure residents in approved premises receive robust support and supervision, including updated induction processes and strengthened welfare checks."
Many thanks for that story, Kath. So my final story for you now in batch number four, we still have one more to come from Kath, is 462 Staffordshire ambulance workers were attacked and abused in the last 12 months. Hundreds of Staffordshire ambulance workers have been attacked or abused simply for doing their jobs. Latest West Midlands Ambulance Service figures show that 462 incidents have been recorded in Staffordshire in the last 12 months. This is out of a total of 3,370 incidents across the West Midlands in the past 12 months and 22,536 cases nationally. Now the ambulance service is launching a social media campaign to highlight the abuse and violence. West Midlands Ambulance Service Chief Executive Anthony Marsh said for many staff this sort of abuse can have a profound impact on their lives, with some staff never recovering and actually leaving the service altogether. While it is a minority of people who commit these offences, we need to publicly support we need public support and the public to support us to make such abuse something that is unacceptable. Its head of security and safety, Dan Knight, added that everyone deserves to come to work without fears of abuse, aggression or violence from the public, whether that be our staff on the front line, patient transport service staff or those who work in our control rooms. The message is simple: abuse will not be tolerated and appropriate actions will be taken when these incidents occur. A total of 3,370 incidents of abuse and violence is 370 too many. We hope that with the launch of this campaign, it will be an important reminder to the public that showing respect to our staff who are ultimately only trying to help people should be a given. The Association of Ambulance Chief Executives, the AACE, has written to ministers responsible for ambulance services in the UK to explore what further national policy interventions can be developed to help combat the growing number of violent assaults against ambulance workers. AACE Chairman Jason Killens said these figures are truly shocking and reflect a pattern of increased violence, aggression and abuse directed at hard-working ambulance people who are there to help individuals in their times of greater need. Frontline staff as well as call handlers are affected by this horrendous abuse, and this unacceptable behaviour has a major long-term impact on the health and well-being of ambulance people who are simply trying to do their jobs and help save lives. This situation is now so serious that we are seeking to engage with UK health ministers at the highest level to explore new interventions that could help deter potential perpetrators of these attacks. We would also underline again that it's vital that the judiciary uses all available legislation to ensure appropriate sentences are handed out consistently to those found guilty of committing these horrific crimes against our workforce. So over to Kath now, who's going to do the final story for us in batch number four.
Mum boycotts Lloyds as bank account shut down in Russia row. A furious mum has had her bank account closed down by Lloyds for sending pocket money to her ballet star son in Russia. Catherine Copeland, 58, has branded the decision to debank her as politically motivated after her son's account was also frozen when he logged into his bank account from Moscow. Now Lloyds have informed her that her own accounts are being shut down completely. Retired ballet teacher Catherine sent money from her Lloyds bank account to son Hector Moore, age 20, via online money transfer service Profi, something she says was completely legal. The mum of two sent him pocket money and help with rent while he was training at the prestigious Bolshoi Ballet Academy in Moscow. Catherine says the problem didn't start until January, when Hector, who has since graduated and now works as a soloist for the Moscow Ballet Theatre, checked his bank balance. She said his account was frozen. He didn't think too much about it I just said, look, don't worry, you can just get on the phone with them, it's probably just because you're overseas. However, when Hector did get in contact with his bank, Mum Catherine says it was like an interrogation. She said he was asked where he was, why he was there, what he was doing, where he worked, the address of where he worked, his tax file number, his work visa. He asked at the end of the call, can I have my bank account unfrozen? Whoever he spoke to said, I need to speak to some people in the back room. Then he had a really rude letter through the post saying he was no longer welcome to be a customer. Since then, Lloyds have targeted Catherine's bank accounts, informing her that her two current accounts and credit card will be closed. Catherine said, it's quite frightening they've got that power to do that. I'm such a law-abiding person, I really am. Even with sending pocket money to Hector in Russia, I researched it so carefully and everything I've done has been completely legal. The service I used is Profi, which is highly regulated. I had to go through a 6-week vetting process with them just to send small amounts. I just haven't done anything illegal. She added, I think this is even racist. It borders on racism. I think they're breaking their own laws. It's a Russophobia, really. That's how I feel, that they are being racist and obviously political. I don't have any political affiliations. I don't even really read the news. But this has upset me so much, I am not going quietly. I am happy never to bank with Lloyds again, but I'm going to be noisy about it. I want attention drawn to it. I'm just outraged. The dancer started studying at the Bolshoi Academy in 2021, a year before Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine. But since then, sanctions and political pressure have added difficulties. Whereas before direct flights were available, now the ballet dancer has to travel back and forth to Moscow via Turkey. Catherine said, he has worked so hard to get where he is, and it's been very difficult to follow a ballet path in the UK. Probably 95% of graduates, even from the Royal Ballet School, have to go overseas to work. There just aren't the jobs here, and it's hard to get a training place here. He was over the moon when he was offered such a wonderful institute to train in, world-renowned. It's very difficult to get in, and he was hand-selected by his teacher there, who was the former principal of the Bolshoi Ballet. The whole time he's been there, he's been treated with nothing but politeness and respect, and to have his own bank treat him so rudely, it's such a contrast. Lloyds Bank said it would never close a customer's accounts based on political or personal beliefs, but that it reserves the right to issue customers a notice to close without explanation. A spokesperson said, we have contacted Mr. Moore and Ms. Copeland regarding their accounts and are unable to comment further.